last case before the break is number 2311327, UHS of Delaware versus Secretary of Labor.
Good.
Take a minute and let those folks leave the room before you begin.
Sure.
Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors. This is an appeal from a decision of the Occupational Safety and Health Commission. It dealt with a citation issued against my client. Suncoast is what we refer to them as, but their formal name is Premier Health Solutions of Florida. They are an inpatient behavioral health facility in Florida that treats seriously mentally ill patients. Many are mandated to treatment there. And the citation arose under the general duty clause, where OSHA has no standard that applies to the particular hazard at issue. And the general duty clause is a catch-all that covers things that are a hazard that are not covered by a regulation. And part of the burden of proof historically by the commission, because the general duty clause does not use the Administrative Procedure Act to vet the particular abatement that is required, is that the secretary prove as part of their prima facie case that the proposed abatements are both economically feasible and effective.
Can I ask you a question sort of right out of the gate?
Sure.
Back in November 2024, I filed a 28-J letter raising Loper Bright and suggesting that it might affect the standard of review in this court, and raising an objection potentially to the use of the single employer test. But our jurisdiction to consider arguments on appeal to us from OSHA is limited to those objections that are urged before the commission. I'm assuming, since Loper Bright came out when it came out, that you in fact did not raise any issues on Chevron or Loper Bright before the commission. Am I wrong in that?
You're absolutely 100% correct.
Okay, so what do we do with that 28J letter? If you have not raised those issues before the commission, you haven't requested this court to remand it to the commission?
No.
So
it just defines the review, your review, the standard of your review of the commission's decision. The commission wouldn't apply its own standard to it wasn't reviewing anything.
You're talking about our review, our standard of review. You're not suggesting that Loper Bright has changed the deference that we would give or the consideration we would give to the single employer test. You would have had to do that before the commission, right?
I'm only addressing, for my respondent, I'm only addressing the determination on the citation, for the substantive citation. The other party will deal with the single employer issue. But to get to the issue with...
And on the citation, you're not contesting the first three elements of hazard. No. You knew about it, and that it's serious either.
No.
Nobody's contesting that. We're down to the abatement issues.
Right.
Right. And with regard to abatement, you're only challenging the third and fourth, I'll call them the security guard requirements. That's what we're about here.
Correct. That's correct.
And I'm going to say this for the secretary to be prepared. There is no evidence in the record that those are economically feasible.
Correct.
The secretary has no evidence of that. And they try to say, well, you can find that from this, that, and the other, but I don't, speaking myself only, I think you can. And they have the burden on the prima facie case. I promise you we got this.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question I have for you, it seems to me, and y'all go on and on, well, but unless they're all eight effective and economically feasible, we don't have to do any, and you've got all kinds of song and dance about all that. Seems to me the solution in this case is actually, I haven't thought about Judge Franzi's question, but the solution is pretty simple. There's no evidence to support factor 3 and 4. I'm leaving aside single employer. We'll get into that, you say. And the other 6, you don't even contest.
Correct.
The other 6. So you're real happy. You want to go home and say, we'll do the other 6 progressively. No evidence on 3 and 4. They take that. No evidence. We go along, do the 6, and if it works out, we ameliorate the problem. And if we don't, you're saying, well, they'll come back and say, well, we should have done the others. Well, if we vacate them, there's no requirement you do them. And then after you do these 6, if they want to make a case that still exists, they can bring another case. And you'd be happy with all that.
Yes, you would save me.
You do 6 progressively. You try the 6. Without prejudice to the secretary bringing another case, whether it works or not, because they're not prejudiced anyway. And so we all go home. There's no evidence of 3 and 4, and they can argue about that later on.
You would say, I'd be very happy. You would save me a minute and 22 seconds.
Yes, okay. If I can just go on Judge Hall's question. What impact, if any, does the secretary's concession that you don't have to do any of the abatement measures?
We weren't, it doesn't have any impact because we're not given that option. The commission, we were cited for specific abatements. And if we do not implement the 3rd and 4th abatement and OSHA conducts a re-inspection, we could be cited with a repeat or a willful with a very significant penalty. And if there's a fatality involved, criminal proceedings.
Yes, but if they're vacated, they're gone, and you're not objecting
right.
to doing the other 6. And the commission, I don't know how to analyze this issue, but it seems like you can separate them and we can say you got to do the 6 and you say you'll do the 6. Have you started the 6? Some of them sound like pretty good ideas.
It's in the record is most of them were done.
Okay.
And we don't have a problem with those because they don't bypass the vetting procedure of the Administrative Procedure Act because there's minimal cost involved.
Right. So. Again, you'll do all 6. You don't have to say the commission's order that you shall do all 6 is enforceable, but we can't do 3 and 4 because they didn't put any evidence.
Right.
And we do that another day, and they can bring another case.
Sure.
I mean, this case has gotten very old. This is a 2017. You need new statistics about what's going on now. It may be just as bad because people haven't gotten any better. You know what I mean? They can bring a new case.
And behavioral health is constantly evolving about what's the best means of treatment and is it therapeutic to have security guards around these patients?
I'm not going to get into all that.
Okay.
Because there's no evidence of economic feasibility.
Right.
And they can respond to that.
But, thank you.
And you can address my 28J letter issue.
We didn't submit it, Your Honor. But good morning, and may it please the Court, Kip Adams for UHS of Delaware.
Objection saying nobody raised a Loper Bright issue. Okay. Nobody's raised it in this case.
I'm here to speak solely upon the commission record.
No, it's represent the parties.
UHS of Delaware. Yes, Your Honor.
And you didn't raise the issue.
I did not.
Okay. So this is Premier Health. Letter. So.
Correct, Your Honor. Yep. And I hear for UHS of Delaware. With my limited time, let me bring you to, I think, what is the key factual error by the commission, and that relates to Brandy Hamilton, the CEO of Suncoast Behavioral Health, employed by UHS of Delaware. There is a finding by the commission that is without support that Ms. Hamilton interacted with patients. And from there, it permeates into at least 2, if not all 3, of the prongs that are needed to prove single entity.
Before you get into how it permeates, but she did do a lot at the facility, correct?
She was the CEO in title,
and
certainly.
She was on the premises.
She was, but not in the patient.
I understand, but we got about interacting with patients. patients. I understand about all that, but you act like that's a big deal. Let's look at what she actually did do. She was on the premises. She managed, supervised. She helped on the safety protocol. She did everything else but interact with patients, correct?
And be exposed to the hazard of workplace violence.
I understand that.
But, yes, I agree with you, Your Honor. That is the elephant in the room, so to speak. I think the court is very aware of that. It permeates both the common work site and the interrelated and interconnected relations.
She's in charge of all the safety about how you interact with patients. I understand she physically didn't go in a patient room and she didn't do that. But she's in charge and delegates and tells everybody what to do.
Well, Suncoast...
On safety and hazards. Is that correct before we argue about it?
I would argue it's not, Your Honor.
Why is it not?
Because
she didn't help standardize and say what the safety protocols are and how you handle all this.
She did. She made recommendations. They provided templates, a lot of guidance.
That's what the CEO says, right?
They did, Your Honor, but they had the freedom not to, and I think that's an important distinction, is that under the management agreement, Suncoast Hospital had the freedom, if it so chose, to shape how they were going to handle safety matters.
But they didn't.
They didn't, but they could have.
They followed exactly what she said.
They did, because UHS provides very comprehensive management consulting services, and they have great knowledge in the area.
Basically, the other circuits have rejected this, right? They've said it's a single employer. Pembroke, exactly.
Third Circuit has, Your Honor, in a very cursory treatment.
I don't know. Judge Millett's opinion on the D.C. Circuit was pretty good. I know it's another facility, but it's the same issue, and yeah, I'll kind of match up with that. I told my clerk, if we put in your name in the Third and the D.C. Circuit, what difference would it make in the analysis? And it pretty much didn't make any difference.
I would agree, Your Honor. I would.
I just thought, well, let's see if there's any difference material, and it didn't seem to be, if you know what I mean.
I understand. Of the decisions that are out there, I think Loretta Oswego is the one that lines up most closely to the UHS of Delaware and Suncoast environment.
Okay. Which one?
Loretta Oswego.
That's the Second Circuit.
It is, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, I'm Amy Tryon for the Secretary of Labor. I'd like to start with the factual issue that my colleague stated that there is no evidence in the record that CEO Hamilton interacts with patients. Actually, an exact quote from CEO Hamilton on pages 2383 to 2384 of the trial transcript is, quote, "I also tell employees that my door is open and that they will see me often, that I'm on the units, and that I will talk to patients, that I will talk to them, and if there's anything that they need, that I'm always available to them." In addition, Suncoast's director of nursing, who is also a UHS of Delaware employee, testified that she regularly goes onto patient units and visits nurses' stations, quote, "to make sure the units are safe."
That's his argument was she doesn't interact with patients. I'm not sure his argument was she doesn't interact with employees.
I believe their argument is that she wasn't exposed to that no UHS of Delaware employee was exposed to the hazard. Right. That's right. And so the record clearly does establish that those two UHS of Delaware employees are on patient units where the hazard is. It doesn't matter for purposes of the single employer finding whether employees of UHS of Delaware were exposed to the hazard alongside employees of Suncoast. Now there is a case that UHS points to, Advanced Specialty, a case from 1976. That commission case was the first commission case to establish the single employer concept for OSHA citations. And the facts of that case did happen to involve employees of two different companies who are working side by side at the same facility.
And single employer business is all regulatory, correct?
I'm sorry.
It's all regulatory, not statutory.
There's no...
Regulations that establish how you do the single employer.
It's the commission, it's commission case law. The commission is an independent adjudicatory body that's not part of the Department of Labor, not part of OSHA, that rules on contested OSHA citations. Right. So this case, in this case, there were undisputedly two employees of two separate companies who were both exposed to cyanide gas and killed, and the commission in that case said that the employers, instead of being cited separately, could and should have been cited as a single employer. But there are many commission cases since that almost 50 years ago date, describing the common worksite factor as just common worksite and upholding single employer findings where you didn't have that dual employee exposure, including UHS of Delaware's previous case just 2 years ago in the Third Circuit. So
what about the fact that on the common worksite issue that UHS has a separate office and headquarters, and UHS only involvement with the Suncoast is having a few of its employees in non-medical roles?
Your Honor, never seen any requirement that the common worksites have to be exclusive, that every single employee of both companies would have to work at the same location all of the time. I think it's undisputed that at Suncoast Hospital, there were Suncoast employees and there were a number of UHS of Delaware employees. The argument that the Loretto Oswego case from 2012, that does not control this case. First of all, Loretto Oswego did not involve the same factual question that we have here about whether a management company, whether two entities constituted a single employer. In that case, OSHA had cited a nursing home, Loretto Oswego, and it was one of three nursing homes that were managed by the same company, LMC. And OSHA had issued what is called a repeat violation, which is a kind of citation that OSHA can issue if an employer has substantially similar violation in the past 5 years. In this case, it was those other two nursing homes that had the substantially similar violations. So OSHA was attempting to prove that all three of the nursing homes plus the management company were the single employer. And there was concededly no common work site in that case. So the factual situation was quite different, and the single employer question is a fact-based one. While UHS says that Loretto Oswego is the case most factually similar to the present one, I would say it's actually UHS of Delaware's own recent case from 2 years ago, where again the Third Circuit affirmed the single employer holding. And we've talked a little bit about standard of review. The standard of review here is in the Occupational Safety and Health Act itself. Substantial evidence is a standard of review. And so really the question on the single employer issue for this court is whether substantial evidence in the record supports that the commission's single employer finding for purposes of this OSHA citation. And the details of that evidence laid out in the Secretary's brief, the Commission's decision, the ALJ's 100-plus page decision, but very short, very quick summary is that Suncoast's CEO, CFO, COO, and Chief Nursing Officer are all UHS of Delaware employees who work on site at the hospital.
Can I ask just a practical question? I mean, Suncoast is solvent. What does it matter whether you have the single employee? I'm just curious as a practical matter. I can see you've got a corporate entity who has a holding company, and the holding company is judgment-proof or whatever. What does it matter here?
I think
it may be important to the commission, important to the Secretary of Labor, but practically speaking, what does it matter?
I think the reason that it matters to OSHA from an enforcement perspective, and it's generally not about ability to pay the fines, which OSHA fines are usually quite light. But this is not the first case of patient on staff workplace violence at a UHS managed facility. They do. Across the country, and OSHA, may be hoping to, perhaps implement
abatement factors 3 and 4.
Yes.
Lack of evidence, because that seems to important to the case.
Yes, Your Honor. So, first of all, there's nothing to vacate here. There's no abatement methods to vacate. The way that the general duty clause works is the Secretary's obligation when the general duty clause is a provision in the
let's say part of the opinion that imposed this is a abatement, reasonable abatement measure. The opinion by the commission says that it's economically feasible. I'm not talking about whether you just say whether that was supported by substantial evidence.
Well, actually, Your Honor, what the commission, so the Secretary's obligation is to demonstrate that there exists a feasible means of abating the hazard at issue. In other words, that there is something that the employer could have done to prevent it. That's the constraining principle of the general duty clause jurisprudence. In the citation, before there was any trial, OSHA proposed 8 different means of abatement, and then at the trial sought to establish that those means of abatement were both feasible and would eliminate or materially reduce the hazard.
You mean economically feasible?
Well,
as part of feasible.
There are generally viewed as having 2 parts, technologically feasible or economically feasible. And it is the Secretary's obligation to demonstrate that there was, again, something they could have done that would have eliminated or materially reduced the hazard. That's right, Your Honor. So the ALJ found that all 8 methods were feasible and would have materially reduced the hazard and affirmed the citation. On appeal to the Commission, Suncoast raised the abatement, the economic feasibility about 3 and 4. So the Commission did request briefing on that, but in the Commission's decision, they said, we don't have to reach the issue of whether 3 and 4 are economically feasible, because there are these 6 other methods that nobody's disputing that we agree are feasible and would materially reduce the hazard, and so the citation is affirmed. And a theme of Suncoast's brief is that
well, you need to talk about the concurrence of the commission where she says, I concur in the judgment, but you do need to reach it. We keep avoiding it over and over again. This is ridiculous. And she writes a very powerful concurrence on the commission. You are obfuscating. You are not doing your duty. So,
well,
I mean, it's pretty clear.
That is a commission member saying that, and, you know, I can tell you frankly that I've worked on a number of these cases, and it is true that there is not clear.
So let's say you're not making remand. You just say that part of the commission's opinion is not supported by the evidence, and the you can't affirm the ALJ's finding as to 3 and 4. I mean, we're not talking about vacate. I mean, I'm just using that as a terminology. There are lots of ways to write it, that abatement. There was no evidence to support that.
Nobody is saying that Suncoast needs to implement and UHS need to implement 3 and 4. That's the general duty clause. They're not in the commission's order, Your Honor. The commission expressly said, you're absolutely right, Your Honor, that the
opinion that say those things are not enforceable at this time.
Correct. And I would like to clarify something about
it. And you don't contest there was no evidence to support them either.
No, I mean, I think that the Secretary would agree, you know, the Secretary argued at trial that they were economically feasible, and the ALJ found that.
Yes, but the question is there any evidence to support that fact-finding? There's none. I mean, I don't know where it leads us, but it's none. Are you going to tell me what the evidence is? Lightfoot didn't even say it.
No, I think that you're... But no, I mean, we can assume that there isn't any evidence because there's no obligation for Suncoast to do those things. And I would really like to make the point that Suncoast doesn't even have to do the 6 specific things that were proven.
We are just a court trying to write an opinion here. That's correct. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
I've got these 8 things. So there's nothing wrong with saying the commission doesn't contend they have to do 3 and 4 and that there's no evidence support. I don't know where that leads us, but you don't contest there's no evidence to support the ALJ's finding.
I did not come prepared to point to substantial evidence in the record supporting those 2 issues.
I argued that in the briefs.
Well, actually, on page 2 of their reply brief, Suncoast says, since the Secretary concedes that we don't have to do 3 and 4, then the Court doesn't need to reach the issue. So
they stand up here.
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, we have a commission. The commission affirmed the citation.
Yes.
Without going into detail on 3 and 4, but has affirmed the citation, did not say 3 and 4 are gone, and they've said the problem we have is we have a citation that if we now don't do those things, the Secretary of Labor is going to come back and say you have violated it, and they've got a willful problem.
Okay, but Your Honor, respectfully, that's not how it works. An employer's obligation under the General Duty Clause is to abate the hazard. They can use whatever method they want. They don't have to use any of the 8 methods that the Secretary identified as long as they eliminate or materially reduce the hazard that exists at their work site.
So what happens if hazard at work site, commission says, okay, citation is issued, commission affirms, you have these 5 options to help you alleviate the hazard.
Yes.
Hazard, they do all of those things, except for maybe 1 because you were requiring a monitor. And they said, well, that's not economically feasible. They do 4 things. Hazard not abated. Are they not going to be subject to, because the hazard has not been abated, even though all of those things were done except for the monitor, that they're not going to face a problem because they didn't do the monitor?
In that circumstance, if OSHA went back and inspected again and determined that, again, there existed in the language of the General Duty Clause, a recognized hazard that was likely to seriously harm or kill employees, then they would have to prove a whole new case. There's no such thing as taking the original citation back and saying, you didn't check everything off the list, so you're cited for violating it. Okay. OSHA would have to bring an entirely new case with a fresh burden of proof and again prove that there is something that they could have materially done. So let's say they do the 6, and OSHA goes back and inspects again, and the only other abatements that OSHA could think of, first they'd have to prove that there's a hazard, and then they would have to prove that abatements 3 and 4 or whatever else they could come up with were feasible and would materially reduce or eliminate the hazard. So it's a whole new case.
But you're not objecting if we clarify in the opinion that 3 and 4 are off the table, whatever language we choose.
Correct. Is my time up? I think my time is up, if there are no further questions. Thank you.
Do you really want to say anything more? I'm just teasing. I couldn't do this.
I think you just won your abatement issue.
Well, but you may want to go to signal. You get so prepared and work so hard, I never want anybody to.
I can save this notebook for another occasion.
No, we want to hear from you.
I don't know if you remember, but you performed my marriage ceremony. 35 years ago.
Not a lot of those.
Yeah, it was when I was with Powell Goldstein years ago.
Okay. What year?
1991.
Okay, then I'm given.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope this goes better.
Not your fault.
I do, but you know, people say, do you remember my case? I have to go look. I have to spend so much time focusing on what the facts are. And lawyers don't believe this, but I have to actually go look at the name of the lawyer. I mean, it's just, you're trying to get it right, and you've got 5 cases today. And people don't understand. Well, don't you remember? Well, okay. I'm just pleased with it. But let's hear it. So how should we write this? Because she says it's not right to vacate and remand, and I think maybe that has some merit. I used wrong language on that. So kind of, what do you say? I think she kind of made a good point.
What we want is
what do you want?
What we want is that the Secretary be required to prove the economic feasibility of every proposed abatement that they are going to enforce on us. And in this case, they didn't do it for 3 and 4, and the commission said they don't have to do it for 3 and 4 because under Pembroke, since it's a process abatement, if any of the abatements is economically feasible, you got to do them all. That's exactly what happened in this case, and that's a result of Pembroke. And the problem with that and why that's so misguided is in this case, We have a paperwork abatement. Just modify your workplace violence prevention plan, which doesn't cost any money. It's easy to do. We don't contest whether it would materially reduce the hazard or not. And as a result of that one no-cost effective abatement, we have to hire all of these security guard types and put them on all the shifts. And without the secretary being required to prove that that, first, is economically feasible, and second, that would actually materially reduce the hazard. So that's the...
from the court saying that the secretary concedes that you don't have to do 3 and 4. You have to abate, you don't have to use those measures. Does that satisfy your concern?
I don't know if they can do that or not, because the commission said we did. I think you would have to vacate. Well, I guess if you vacate them, we don't have to do them. But it doesn't really matter the reason.
Go away from it. Just say, you can say that we affirm the commission's decision in part and reverse in part that abatement 3 and 4 were not shown to be economically feasible. I mean, there's...
You can do that, but what about the...
Have to do measures 3 and 4 because they were not shown to be economically feasible at this time.
And the plus on that is that that's part of the secretary's burden of proof. That would fix this problem going forward. Thank you.
Briefly, may it please the court, Advanced Specialty is a case cited by both parties here on single employer, cited by UHS of Delaware in large part because you have two employers in what sounds like the same factory with no dividing walls whatsoever being exposed to harmful gases. I would argue that that is proof that the same hazard is not what UHS of Delaware, Brandy Hamilton, is being exposed to versus Suncoast staff and patients that are de-escalating patients, monitoring people. These wards, these units are locked. They have locked doors. Nobody's allowed in or out without specific access. Ms. Hamilton was pretty clear. She is the CEO, but when you look at where she worked and when she said she worked there, she said, I was in the units, generally speaking, to conduct kind of an inspection once a month sometimes, sometimes once a quarter, and sometimes we did it by video. So the idea that she could be reasonably predicted.
Did she go to nurses' stations on the ward?
Most likely as paperwork review was part of that inspection.
And can you answer my question just because I try to learn things when I do?
Of course, Your Honor.
What is the practical difference? Because the penalty is $12,000. I mean, y'all conceded that. You said if we affirm or don't reverse wholly on the single employer, you know, you're not challenging the penalty. What is the practical difference other than as a corporation you have to report this violation, which I'm sure has some consequence?
Yeah, I think the practical difference is some concern that UHS of Delaware could be subjected to a finding that it is a single employer of many of the facilities that has relationships with, all of which are a little bit different. They're right. Built differently. Some are big, some are small.
So we need to say under the particular facts of this case and the particular way this relationship between Pembroke is that. You like that kind of language.
The burden here is on the secretary to deal with Suncoast Behavioral Health Hospital in Bradenton, Florida. If there's nothing further, I thank the court.
We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.
All right.